From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life, as well as how we can engage our government and culture from a biblical perspective. And on today's show, we have a really special interview with the Abby Johnson, the real-life story and inspiration behind the groundbreaking film Unplanned, which tells Abby's life story of leaving Planned Parenthood, where she served as a clinic director and even won Employee of the Year, and now advocates for life. It's an incredibly powerful and inspiring interview. You won't want to miss it. We'll play that here coming up on the show. But first, we're also going to talk about this growing trend of whitewashing and erasing seemingly mundane terms that are now deemed offensive, including manhole and apparently America. But first, I want to start the show by picking up where we started last week's show with the story about Planned Parenthood abruptly firing their new CEO, Dr. Leanna Wen, because she was wanting to focus and grow the organization's work on healthcare instead of, quote, doubling down on abortion. And we now know who the replacement is, and it really doesn't come as any surprise, but it certainly doesn't fit the narrative that Planned Parenthood has been trying to sell. Their new CEO, at least for now, is Alexis McGill Johnson, who has been with the organization for over a decade and previously served as chair of the board of Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood Action Fund, and as chair of Planned Parenthood's Action Committee. According to Bustle.com, Johnson has a, quote, clear record in social justice and political advocacy, while Wen is a physician who focused on healthcare. So that's why I find this so interesting for two reasons. One, they fired a real physician for wanting to focus on healthcare, which they say is what they're about, and they hired a political activist to be their new CEO. And of course, that's fine. That's their right. It just really shows their true colors and that they're really trying to engage more in political activism and abortion rights and less in women's healthcare. The second reason that this is so fascinating, this just came out in a new story this week. There are new reports that suggest there is more to the story here. Two anonymous Planned Parenthood informants spoke to BuzzFeed News and accused former CEO Leanna Wen of mismanaging the abortion chain and refusing to allow others to control what she said. For example, one source told BuzzFeed News that Wen refused to use trans-inclusive language. Planned Parenthood apparently wanted her to say that people can get pregnant and have abortions, not women. And Wen reportedly resisted their speech demands, saying women get pregnant and have abortions, not men or people in general, which seems pretty common sense and factually accurate. But apparently that was not enough to appease the board at Planned Parenthood, who terminated her for refusing, at least in part, for refusing to change the terminology she was using when speaking. Conservative Review reported more on this last week, writing, as transgenderism has risen in the national dialogue, so has the discussion about whether men can get pregnant, given the repeated stories of biological women who have gone through pregnancy after identifying as male. And other abortion proponents have been quicker to get on board with the idea that men can get pregnant. For example, back in May, Planned Parenthood of New York City President Laura McQuaid called pro-life laws, quote, not just an attack on women, but, quote, an attack on anyone who can or might get pregnant. And at a recent 2020 Democratic debate, candidate Julian Castro said that he would, quote, absolutely cover abortions for transgender females who are biological males and can't get pregnant. So that's where this is going. You know, for so long, abortion proponents would accuse pro-lifers that they hate women because they support pro-life laws and policies, and now that is shifting to apparently just hating all people, both men and women. If you are pro-life or support pro-life policies or simply think that the unborn are in fact human and deserve to live, that is now an attack just on people in general, humanity itself, because in this brave new world, both men and women can get pregnant, at least according to some. And as strange as that might sound, this can and has unfortunately had serious consequences. This is a tragic story from May of this year that was reported by the New England Journal of Medicine about a baby that died because the mother's medical records listed her as a male. Again, this is from the New England Journal of Medicine, who published this story about a transgender man, so a biological woman, who entered a hospital with severe abdominal pains. And because she was identified as a man, the doctors naturally did not think to treat her for labor and delivery. So tragically, the baby was lost. And here's the thing. The mother had already taken a home pregnancy test that came out positive. Her water had broke by the time she got to the hospital, and it took the doctors hours to be able to confirm a pregnancy. They took an ultrasound and found clear signs of fetal heart activity. But by the time doctors were able to perform an emergency C-section, the baby's heartbeat had already stopped. Reporters for the Washington Post wrote tellingly that if a clearly identified woman had shown up with similar symptoms, she would almost surely have been triaged and evaluated more urgently for pregnancy-related problems. So, in other words, it's this confusion over transgender identity that prevented the doctors from giving this mother and the baby the care that they needed, and it cost the baby's life. Columnist Tyler O'Neill, writing for PJ Media, put it this way. In this mother's tragic case, the medical profession's rapid embrace of transgender identity actually cost a human life. This unborn baby had done nothing to deserve death, but because the baby's mother identified as a man and because medical records listed her as a male, her baby was not given the help this most vulnerable human needed to survive. The tragedy in this case is not those bigoted doctors and nurses who weren't woke enough to realize that men can and do get pregnant, but the prevailing fiction that this biological woman really is a man. Because had the medical records not listed her as male, her baby might be alive today. But if you espouse those beliefs, it can also get you fired, like Dr. Alan Josephson. According to National Review, Dr. Alan Josephson is a distinguished psychiatrist who since 2003 has transformed the Division of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at the University of Louisville from a struggling department to a nationally acclaimed program. However, in the fall of 2017, he appeared on a panel at the Heritage Foundation and shared his professional opinion on the medicalization of gender-confused youth. The university responded by demoting him and then effectively firing him. And this was at an off-campus event on his own time, speaking in his personal capacity. And now we've also learned this week that the city of Berkeley, California, will soon be without manholes. There will also be no chairman, no manpower, nor policemen or policewomen. According to CNN, those words that imply a gender preference will be removed from the city's codes and replaced with gender-neutral terms, such as maintenance hole and human effort. According to the bill's primary author, this item passed unanimously without discussion or comments because it was non-controversial. And boy, or excuse me, I should say person, if you thought words like manpower and manhole were offensive, you are in for a surprise because Colorado State University recently declared the words America and American as offensive. Officials at the public university were telling students that these terms were offensive according to the university's new inclusive language guide. Thankfully, this did not sit well with at least one person. Colorado Congressman Doug Lamborn blasted this decision from the university on Twitter last week. He wrote, "Wow, Colorado State University's Inclusive Comms Task Force decided that America is a word so offensive it should not be spoken. I'm proud to be an American. All Americans from all walks of life should be able to say they're proud of their country." Or at least I think they should be able to say the name of their country or where they're from and that they're an American without being offensive. So what should we make of all of this? What are we to do? Well, I believe that we can speak truth to power. And very importantly, we as a society, we can respect the dignity of all people while also being able to rigorously and civilly debate philosophical differences and arguments, including about difficult issues like sex and gender identity. We can and should embrace truth and reason and civil discourse instead of political correctness and who can shout the loudest. We can continue to ensure that our own government isn't punishing people, peaceful citizens, for expressing their beliefs or for living according to their own faith or for simply believing what the Bible says about marriage and sexuality. We can show compassion and kindness to all people from all walks of life while still living according to our own conscience. But in order to do that, we can't be afraid. We have to have the courage to stand up and engage our government and the political process and ensure that all laws respect the right of all people to live and work according to their sincerely held beliefs. And in such a diverse and pluralistic society like ours, you're going to have very differing beliefs and opinions and philosophies and religions, and we can coexist. We can ensure that our laws do in fact respect the freedoms of all people and that our government isn't picking sides and winners and losers and forcing everyone to agree on the most controversial of issues. The answer to speech you don't like isn't censorship or fines or punishment. It's more and better speech and rigorous debate. And that's why we have the First Amendment. Our founders rightly understood that our rights come from God and not government, and people should be free to speak or not speak according to their religious or non-religious beliefs. We should treat all people with dignity and respect, and at the same time, we should continue to stand for truth in the public square. And someone who knows a thing or two about doing that is Abby Johnson. She is a former Planned Parenthood clinic director who, after witnessing an abortion, now advocates for life. And she has become one of, if not the, leading pro-life advocate in the entire country. And she is going to be our special guest on August 27th for the Nebraska Family Alliance 2019 Gala. It is going to be a celebration of life, and we are so excited to get to bring Abby to Nebraska to share more about her story that inspired the movie Unplanned and how we all can continue to advance a culture of life. And in anticipation of our event with Abby Johnson on August 27th, we wanted to give listeners a special preview or sort of a sneak peek into what you can expect to hear from Abby and get better insight into her story and what life has been like for her. And this past week, our executive director at NFA, Karen Bowling, had the opportunity to sit down for an interview with Abby to ask her some questions. And it's really just a fantastic conversation. And we wanted to share it here on the program today. So here is Karen Bowling from her interview this past week with Abby Johnson.
I'm thrilled to have Abby Johnson join me today. She is founder and CEO of And Then There Were None, and author of Unplanned, which was turned into a groundbreaking film about Abby's life story. Abby, your life story is changing hearts and minds. When Unplanned was released in theaters, it's really sparked a national conversation about abortion, and lives are being saved. What's your life been like since the release of Unplanned?
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, it's been a whirlwind, honestly. you know, I've never done this before. I've written books, I've done, you know, speaking tours, but to actually have a film come out about your life, that was new territory for me and my family. And, you know, we've been learning the process as we've been going along. And I tell you though, just, you know, waking up and seeing the emails and messages pouring in from people saying, you know, I walked into your film pro-choice, I walked out pro-life, or people saying, you know, youth ministers taking their youth groups and youth having these profound conversions on the issue of life, and even women and men who have had abortions themselves who've never gone through healing, you know, emailing and saying, I finally feel like I'm at a place where I need to find healing, and we're able to get them connected. And it's just been really beautiful and just a profound thing to witness God's mercy in such an incredible way.
Well, Abby, you've had to become very personal. What made you decide to be so open and vulnerable in sharing your story publicly?
You know, it took some time in prayer, honestly, to make that decision, because when I was originally approached by the directors, my initial thinking was, I just don't know if that's something I want to do. I felt like I'd already been just incredibly vulnerable in my book and in my talks and what I have shared publicly. And I realized that opening myself up for people to see my story on a screen, to visually see that, was going to be even another layer of vulnerability. And I just wasn't sure that that was something that I wanted to do. But, you know, I prayed about it, and the directors actually came down to Austin, where we live, and met with my husband and I, and met with my parents and some other key people who were a part of my story. And, you know, after having conversations with them and praying with them and just really discussing what my expectations would be, I felt confident that this was the route that God wanted me to take. And I felt that way because I kept recalling all of the speaking events I've done across the country and all of the women who have walked up to me and they've said, I had an abortion 30 years ago. I had an abortion 40 years ago. I had an illegal abortion 55 years ago, and I've never told anyone until right now. And I thought, you know, God has already used my story. It was really his story, in such a powerful way. And I thought this could be just another outlet to get people into healing resources and to hopefully change the conversation surrounding abortion.
Absolutely. I know, Abby, when I went to the movie, I was riveted, but I was also compelled by your redemptive story. And it's bringing hope, like women just like you, across America and beyond. I know we are so excited to have you in Nebraska on August 27th for the Nebraska Family Alliance, a partnership dinner, really to celebrate the cause of life. What is at the heart of your message as you travel across the country, boldly sharing your story and telling the truth about abortion? What drives you, and what will you be sharing that night?
Well, first I want to apologize for all of the life you can hear in the background at my home, my 8 children. I try to find quiet places in my house to do interviews, and I've just learned that it doesn't exist. The quiet place doesn't exist.
You know what? We're going to celebrate family with you, Abby. I love it. I love it.
This is real life, you know, in real life. So, you know, honestly, I travel around and I talk to people who, you know, they say, you know, I've always been pro-life. I've always been comfortable checking a box that says I'm pro-life, right? Or I vote for a pro-life candidate. And those things are important. But I want to really challenge people to go the next step and to get uncomfortable and to really find their place, find that place where they can be active in this movement, whether it's out in front of abortion facilities, whether it is inside of pregnancy resource centers, whether it's lobbying at your state capitol, whatever it may be, to really push yourself past what feels comfortable, because these unborn children and their mothers, they deserve that. And so I hope that by hearing my story and by hearing what's really taking place, what these mothers and their innocent children are really going through inside of these clinics, I hope that that does spur people to action and really helps to motivate them.
I love advancing the culture of life, and I like to look at it, if each one of us does our part, we really shift a nation in how we view the life issue. Abby, you have launched And Then There Was None. Tell us about that ministry.
Sure. So I founded the organization in mid-2012, and the goal was to simply get abortion clinic workers, ancillary staff, nurses, physicians, to get them out of the abortion industry and to get them into a path of healing and really ultimately get them into a relationship with Jesus Christ, because we know that only true healing comes through Him. And so, you know, we didn't know how successful we would be in the beginning. I mean, you know, it's sort of a hard sell convincing
yes.
abortion clinic workers
yes.
to trust us in the pro-life movement. But in the past few years, we have helped over 530 abortion clinic workers come to experience the beauty of Christ and come into a relationship with Him and leave their jobs and to have that conversion experience. And it's just been really amazing to sort of link arms with God on this project and to seek out the one, right? To seek out the one who is lost, who is hurting, who desperately needs Him. And, you know, we just, it's been more successful than we could have ever imagined. And that's just what God does, right? That's just how He works. We expect little and He gives us an abundance. And that's really what we've experienced within And Then There Were None.
We are going to be supporting you in prayer. And I love your personal story, how out of your own heartbreak and tragedy, you are now using it to highlight truth about abortion, but taking it even a step further and assisting others wanting to come out of the abortion industry. We are so thrilled for you and your family. And Doug, we thank God. We see you both as champions, and precious Fulton, who will be traveling with you. God bless you, Abby. Thank you for your time, and we can't wait to see you in Omaha on August 27th, and we encourage our listeners to come here, Abby, on the 27th at the Embassy Suites in La Vista. Purchase your tickets today at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org as we celebrate life together. God bless you, Abby.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it.
And we hope to see you there on August 27th. It's going to be such a special and inspiring evening. I can't wait to hear more from Abby. And again, you can purchase your tickets at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And we currently have early bird ticket prices that end this Wednesday. Tickets are currently 30% off. So make sure you visit our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, and reserve your tickets now. And join us as we stand for life in Nebraska. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.